Welcome to another episode of Tech Bites, brought to you by The Gateway.
Amin, welcome to another episode. Thank you so much for being here and flying with just me. I know our colleague and other partner is traveling all around the universe, exploring wonderful new technologies. Biagio will bring us reports of the frontier in the coming weeks, and we look forward to that. But I'm excited to talk with you today, as always.
I am so glad to be here. And I'm also so glad that you know where Biagio is. I thought he was missing. I had given up, but I'm obviously joking.
Correct.
He's in his beloved country, Italy, enjoying his time during the heat wave without air conditioning, appreciating
it. Right. It's always nice when we're in the Midwest and our wonderful friends go travel into these beautiful places, and then it becomes very hot without air. And there's a moment where I'm kind of like, ha-ha. But I'm sure he's enjoying the time and all the wonderful food. So, yes.
Same happened to me. Coming back to the Midwest, I appreciate the freezer temperature gas stations that I walk into.
And the gas stations are incredibly chilly at all times. I feel like that is something we could be proud of as the Midwest. It's just any gas station you walk into, it's going to be -5 degrees in there. So, you know.
That's what you need, yes.
Correct. I think they're working on new AI to make it even colder in gas stations, which leads us right to what we're going to talk about today. And I think it's going to be more of the policy and the policing of AI. Over the past couple of weeks, there's been a lot of talk within different organizations and different tools out there about the potential for these technologies to do harm or to go beyond what we are ready as a society for them to do. So much so that some professionals from OpenAI, from Google, wrote an open letter addressing some of their concerns, which I found it to be very interesting within that one, because it's always a different perspective when the people on the inside are starting to raise red flags. But do you feel that same way too? Or am I, again, just catastrophizing?
No, I think these technologies are no joke. And I think the threats are serious. And also the aspect of it is that we don't know the full threat landscape. Unfortunately, because obviously brand new technology. And this always having people from the other side, as you said, mentioning the potential threats and also urging society to take action is always a good sign and always a sure sign that we need to take action. And this kind of a pattern with most technologies that have been regulated eventually. And this these concerns remind me of a NPR story I listened to once. I'm an NPR fan. I don't know how cool that is anymore, but I really like them. But there was an episode of Planet Money where one of their podcasts, where they contacted an AI company to develop a voice model of one of their retired hosts to run an episode with AI-generated text. And it was successful. And they were talking to this company that generates voice models for every person. Like you can, I think it's like $25,000. You can get a voice model of yourself, something like that. They were talking about the founding of their company. And of course, it's not regulated. And the founders were saying, once we succeeded in making this, there was some sort of a moment where we felt like immense, we were scared. We felt fear. And the minute we played it back several times, we realized that this is no joke. This is not funny anymore because this is too realistic. And that same thing happened with the current hosts of the podcast, where they retired colleague's voice was played back, and in front of him, all of them, instead of getting excited and laughing, they were kind of a sobering moment. So, of course, it needs some sort of oversight because so much harm can be done. This cuts the core of what media is, what media is within itself, because we always need to verify where the voice is coming from, whether the voice is in the media, whether the voice is written, printed, or played back. A fundamental aspect of media is that we need to know whose it is, whose voice this is. And with AI, that's become a bigger problem because we always got the newspaper from the publisher that verified to us that this came from the editorial. With websites, we verify them that this is coming from the actual owner and the authors. With videos and with in-person interactions, that's not a problem. But with videos and with voice, we rely on our own biological recognition to verify who this is coming from. However, it seems like we can't rely on that much anymore. I do agree with the former team members of OpenAI and Google and DeepMind and Google's DeepMind that there needs to be some sort of regulation that kind of guarantees this for us. But I'm not sure about what that would be, and I'm not sure about the technological means we have for it.
Right, like some type of a digital or technological or coding watermark in the background. But we already see right now how even with blog posts or articles with a written word, how quickly we just believe whatever is said based on a post, social media, anything like that. If you literally have to dive into the code to determine if it was created by a human or some type of a more, I guess you could say, biological being at that point, I don't think we're even going to do that at all because we don't even do the basic steps right now to find out whether it's the Onion or a real news source and not just satire. Tire. So that goes into what you're saying of like we need some regulation here, which automatically is confronted by any of those people that might be more aligned to pro-capitalism or open capitalism in the sense that whenever you put a regulation on it, you're hindering creativity and innovation, which is exact. I mean, that's true. We're literally saying let's slow this technology down.
And
And
that's
are we
usually
then potentially limiting what we can do, the solutions we can have as a society? Because we do, like for me, I always hear AI is going to be the reason why we solve global warming and we fix world hunger because these computers, these learning algorithms are going to be able to make connections that we humans physically cannot do. And now we've solved it. But if we're putting brakes on them or boundaries on them, do we limit that? But again, by opening up all of the potential, are we then also telling, figuring out new ways to destroy the entire world as quickly as possible? You know, the other side of that spectrum.
I completely agree. That's always been true, and people on with right-leaning economic views will tell you that regulation will hinder innovation. That's true. That's absolutely true. However, I don't see it doesn't seem that anyone disagrees on regulating AI. However, the there are still several important decisions. So how to regulate it, the big question, when to regulate it, and how deep, how much. And all those will affect how much the innovation will continue. I think the reason there is hesitancy in coming up with regulation is that the technology is still developing fast. It still needs that breathing room to innovate, continue its innovation. So I think the governments around the world are letting it have that room without, especially that without knowing the extent it will advance They will not be able to exactly hone down the right balance of regulation and which regulation to put on this. But I agree that there must be a way for people to know whether a media, picture media, voice media, everything was recorded or generated. And it doesn't mean that governments can stop fake ones. However, if there's a framework to verify, then that's enough. Because then we will put the responsibility on people who consume media that did you verify that? Was it fake or was it real? Things like that. And then, of course, that centralizes the verification authority. And then we would have to trust that one. And in a in I think what I see here as what I can envision here is another ecosystem of accountable entities, non-government accountable entities that act as verifiers. And then if all of them have a consensus something is real, then it's real.
So, I mean, are you in this one? And I kind of like where you're thinking about it. And I'm going to use a term, and I know it comes with a lot of baggage behind it, but I think it's the only thing that kind of is out there right now that even is relatable, but kind of like a UN of artificial intelligence. I know when we say non-governmental, those are still associated with governments, but something like a global authority that says we don't have any interest in this. We're just literally verifying, is this real or is this artificial intelligence? And getting more of like a stamp that says this is fake or this is artificially generated, and that's all it is. You could do with it what you want because it may still be giving you real information, but this is not a real human talking to you. This has been created by, an algorithm in there. But that makes me concerned. I mean, that brings up another thing because I'm not quite sure we have a belief in any type of an organization like that. I can't think of an organization out there right now that is on some side of a political spectrum not dealing with, I don't know, confrontation or conflict. Like I really struggle to think of one type of an organization, especially when you broaden to a larger scale at the global level too. I don't know of anyone. And COVID really highlighted that. I thought there were a lot before COVID. And then you're like, oh, some of these large organizations that it was just you took as truth, are now continually being dealing with those confrontations
Yeah,
and
they
being
struggle with their
criticized.
authority to
Right,
a
correct.
very deep extent. So when I'm saying verification, I'm not, so I think you are thinking of official verification. I am thinking of independent verification. I think the
I see.
for example, as you said, this word, this new word that I'm going to say has a lot of baggage too, not different from yours. The mainstream media is
Right.
an accountability ecosystem. It operates the reason they are mainstream. That's their feature. Being mainstream, that's their feat is their feature, and the level of independence they have from each other, which at this time globally is quite high, because these are large organizations that compete over money, which creates competition, which is the best form of independence, because they are not only independent, they not only they don't have reasons to support each other, they have reasons to attack each other, which is increases the level of holding each other to account. And even though trusted institutions, including the mainstream media, is at very probably historic lows, still we rely on them. Everyone relies on them. People who cannot talk about how terrible, cannot stop talking about how terrible mainstream media is, they still rely on flash flood warnings from that same sources. They still rely on traffic news, or they still rely on other important things, such as if a hurricane is coming. They still, if mainstream outlet says some danger is imminent, they believe it. So it is a functioning system. I think we have confused their opinions, which have grown in consumption by people, and also their airtime has made them less popular, because of course when you take a position, you are taking that risk. And given that the whatever has caused the current the deep depth of the divisions has kind of spilled over to every institution we have, because at some point every position they take becomes left or right. So, but even in this environment, the verification system that mainstream media has works, and we rely on it. Even in the countries with least freedoms, you still spread information that is used daily using the mainstream ecosystem of media outlets, even the ones that are not as independent as it should be. However, and I think that is an example where that is evidence that that kind of environment works and can work, because the world has relied on independent news reporting by independent outlets for a very, very long time now, and it still works despite being incredibly unpopular and people being critical of it and having its own deep flaws. And I think that can that will and should exist for generated and recorded material, verifying generated and recorded material.
You
And
know, I mean, real fast, I think you bring up a really good point where you're saying, hey, there's deep flaws in some of those things. And right now, it's very easy, or I feel like in our society, at least in America specifically, it's if there's any flaw, the whole thing sucks and it's done. Right, like the road system is terrible, so we don't need roads. And you're like, well, you know, everyone still uses roads every single day. And having that ability to identify the flaws, the issues, and try to improve it, but not completely get rid of it. Because I think it's just everyone's like, all right, well, I just want it done. I want it gotten rid of completely. And then the minute you bring up the next thing of like, well, what replaces it? That's when there's really not a resolution. But I think a lot of people are just like, I'm fine, we'll deal with that then. I just want this gone. And that to me is very concerning as well.
Exactly. It's like it is not reasonable. It's not rational to burn a house down if you don't like how it looks, or if your house is not working the way you want, for example, it's colder than you like, or if your windows are not good enough, you don't get rid of them. You
Right.
can replace them if you have better windows. We can try and do that. Or you can try and insulate them and fix them, but it makes no sense to rip them off and throw them in the trash. And that's the same with the media. It has its problems, and main one is that their incentive is to make money, not report. And that's what we need them to for. We need them for reporting, not making money. But I don't have a solution for that. I don't know if that will ever be solved. However, what I'm trying to say is there can be an ecosystem where incentives are aligned for independent entities to be to exercise good faith in verification, and without conflict of interest or minimal conflict of interest, and so that we and our goal is to rely on them. So if we solve that, then we have, just like any other information that we can rely on, for example, how many people died in a flood. We rely on that information on mainstream media. We could rely on this ecosystem of verification authorities, whether to say, did, for example, President of France declare war on the US or not? You know what I mean? Is this his video or her video saying that
Right.
we are attacking the US or we are attacking Australia, for example, because they don't like each other? I think that is possible. However, how they would verify it, I can think of human terms. For example, these verifying agencies could call the president's office in France, right? That's like the ground truth, sure way to verify. However, I cannot think of a technological way to reliably tell whether something is generated or not. And we have talked about this. Anyone who's trying to sell a model today that identifies generated versus not human written or human recorded is basically lying. They are selling the product. I don't know, at some point they need to be sued for selling a product that they know doesn't work, because it's by nature unidentifiable. And if it is identifiable, the model wasn't trained correctly and can be corrected right away with the model that, if you find a model that can identify generated material, the model that generated those materials can use that same model to fix that parts that the other one identifies. Can learn from it. That's why it's impossible. The generating model learns from identification, successful identifications.
Kind of like a virus. If we
Yes.
create an antibody, it can use that antibody to then say, now I'm immune to that aim, now I don't have that one. Okay. Well,
Yes, but a perfectly working one, like not percentage-wise, yeah.
Like always. Yeah, it's not just relying on evolution for that one and
Yeah.
saying, no, I know that 100%
It's like, yeah,
now.
the generating model looks at the model that detects it and learns from it and done.
And says, okay, now you can't detect me, correct?
Anymore, yeah.
Yeah.
So it is basically not possible technologically. And we always come back to this. We always come back to transparency models or interpretability of models. There are many words people use to refer to this, but I want to call them, this is what I try to promote about readability. So we can read these models. All models are some sort of instructions to make a decision. That's what a model does. And we can read these instructions in deep models. In deep neural networks, we cannot read those. And that's why we don't know if the model will make mistakes, and if all of them will. We don't know what kind of mistakes it will make. That's why its applications are kind of always scary and risky. And that's why it's regulating it cannot involve reading the model, and that makes it very hard. For
Right.
example, the regulator could say, we models that make things up are banned. We don't know. We can't identify those models. That means all of them now. So
Right.
that's why that regulation doesn't exist.
The hallucinations that some of these models create, some of
Yeah.
the information that we get from ChatGPT, or now when you search Google, what do I do with a burn? And it says, hey, rub a bear claw on it. And you're like, what was that? Where did that come from? You made that up. And you're like, well, yeah, but somewhere in that deep algorithm, it made sense.
Yeah, it did connect the two dots, probably from a novel to a real historical thing, and then said this is true. And the thing is, we don't know. That's the problem. We don't know how that got hallucinated. We don't know from which data points it came from, where it learned it from. And we don't know if it will do it ever again or what other hallucinations it will generate. So
So for
that's the problem.
I mean, from my perspective, I really had a new way of looking at models and algorithms and these decision-making processes when I was presented with the very simple question of identifying whether music is rap, like hip hop, or country music, and identifying how you would define that, like just from two humans talking and saying, okay, is it, is there more acoustic music? Okay, that's probably country. Is it more, created, more rhythmic music? That's probably more rap. And looking at those elements within music, and very quickly, you can always find something that breaks that rule. So then you have to write another rule or another
Yeah.
step to that rule and another step to that rule. And And what you're talking about within these like black box algorithms is that there's so many rules and so many iterations of this that literally we can't go in and say, okay, we know every step of what they've done.
No.
I'm personalizing them, I'm making them humans, what these codes have done, basically.
Yes. So let me, you are cutting to the core of estimation science and using past data. Let me paint this picture for you. Imagine a three-dimensional space, right? And you have, let me find a better analogy. So what's happening is we have when we have data, this data exists in a mathematical space, and that mathematical space each has a dimension that is equal to every dimension, and each dimension is an observation we have. For example, when you are talking about rap music versus country music, so a song, let's think. How many aspects do you consider in converting this? Let's say you consider 10 aspects. So every song, given those aspects, exists in a 10-dimensional space, right? And this 10-dimensional space is vast because dimensions grow, the possibilities within growing dimensions is exponential. For example, three-dimensional space has exponentially more area or volume than a two-dimensional space. And when it's 10, it's unimaginably high. So, and smallest data sets have 10. We have data sets that have hundreds of dimensions. So the space in which these observations exist are vast, are unimaginably vast, probably larger than the known universe, because of how it's called curse of dimensionality. With increasing dimensionality, the possibilities of things existing in it grows, or its perceived volume grows exponentially and unimaginably. That means no matter how large your data set is, the space it exists in is incredibly sparse. Is incredibly sparse. You know what this means? This means no matter how many country songs and how many rap songs you have listened to, the new one you're listening to is like none of them. That's what curse of dimensionality does, because there's space for a new song to exist too.
The island always gets better. Like the more you know, the more you don't
Yeah.
know. Okay.
The more you know, you cover more space, but you will never, ever, ever come close at filling the entire space. So you are never going to see it all in any data set or observation. What model does, what our brains do, they generalize. Based on what we have seen, it fills the empty spaces within this dimensions, or all of these dimensions. For example, based on what you know from country songs, based on what you know from old songs that you have seen, rap songs and country songs, you're trying to see which one it's closest to. And which there's a line in your mind that runs between the most similar rap song that you have seen, heard, and the most similar country song to the song you're considering you have heard, and you're deciding which side of this line this falls into. And that's exactly what a model does. And theoretically, a deep model should do that too, but deep models, there's no guarantee that a deep model will where they will draw that line in the empty spaces. So they will match an existing observation to a past one, right? They will match it. But if there is a new observation that, like the song we mentioned, that is brand new, then they will have to make that up, the decision. They have to make a decision based on the past ones. And that's the majority of decisions they make. Because almost everything new we encounter in the world is new unobserved data that we have not had a chance to use for training. And that is why it has to fill those space. Then with deep models, we don't know how the model fills those empty spaces, and that's why its predictions The type of errors it makes or the predictions it will make are unknown to us because we can't read it.
Well, and just the terminology you're selecting within that by saying predictions. I think as someone who is an expert in the field and at least spends a significant time on the peripheral of artificial intelligence and working with these at a very intimate level, you're using the terms very specifically by saying these predictions. But
Yes.
when you step away from it and we remove it, telephone happens. And when it gets into media and when it gets into just common nomenclature, we start saying, oh, the answer that
The
it
answer,
gave,
yeah. It
right? And you're
doesn't
like,
become, it's
oh,
not an estimate anymore. It
correct.
becomes very close to truth for people.
Correct. And as humans, we're making estimations of it. And if 100 times this algorithm gives me the exact correct answer, that the validity of it within my being, my experience only becomes more and more accurate. And then when I hear everyone else do it, and then when I hear it write a paper for me and it sounds better than what I can write and way
Yeah.
faster, all of a sudden it is truth. Like it is
Yeah.
right. And to be very diligent, it goes back to what we were talking about with Tesla and driving. It's better to not expect the car to drive itself because then I'm going to be diligent. I'm going to make those changes with the steering wheel, with the acceleration all the time. But the minute you start telling me I don't need to, now there's a much bigger risk because I'm
Yes.
not going to be as diligent. And that's kind of what is happening with these artificial intelligences. These are right answers. So now you don't have to pay attention. And a lot of these, like ChatGPT, OpenAI, deep learning, they're marketing that as saying you don't have to
Yeah.
think about this anymore. And really,
Exactly.
you should. But now you have to be even more diligent, which we're not good at as humans when you're telling us we don't have to care about it anymore.
I think sometimes you can, for example, I think in general, we can never tell if a model is perfectly good or like how good it is. It's always an estimation. Like we always say probably the model will be fine. However, it depends on the application whether we should mark it. You can rely, like you don't have to think or you don't have to drive. It depends on the application. For example, for self-driving, we should not, if we have made this using deep learning, we should not tell people that this can drive for you. Because we don't know for sure. For that kind of when there is life and death, for example, when it's making driving decisions, when deep models are making surgical decisions, we should not rely on it 100% unless we can actually prove that this will always do the right thing or will never do a certain type of catastrophically wrong things. But we can't do that with deep learning, with deep models. We cannot show what kind of errors it will make. We cannot study what kind. We can always work on that probabilistically. We can put it in as many through we can put it through as many scenarios as we can and study the type of errors it makes. That is not enough for many applications. For example, surgery, self-driving. It is not enough for those to say this will most likely be do the right thing. We need to demonstrate, like prove, and I'm talking about analytical proof, and that some model will not make certain mistakes, and that is not possible with deep learning. But let's say you want to use these bots for customer service, and you have fed your website information, for example, your customer wants to know how. If it's possible for them to bring three extra bags and what the estimated cost would be, all of that. Of course, by all means, market to your customers and say, the AI companies can market to the airline and say, this will give correct baggage information almost all the time. That's good enough. You know what I mean? But there are areas where making errors is critical and can be catastrophic. And also the type of error makes a huge difference. For example, if baggage allowance is communicated wrongly, airline can absorb a $30 cost. That's completely fine. However, if the self-driving system has some is likely to make some errors, it could run someone over. But
Right.
that is not the same.
Right.
So.
Well, so as we're I'm thinking back on regulation and these models and the improvements to society, because I still believe self-driving is going to happen. I believe those things are we're going to improve them and we're going to get there at some point. But I don't think we'll ever be 100%. Like, it just will not be that way. There's always going to be something. So I could see something like in the court of law, like there's this the preponderance of evidence in a tort case. There's a reasonable doubt that, hey, beyond a reasonable doubt, this person committed this crime. I could see something like that being associated with these algorithms or these artificial intelligent tools that beyond a analytical error of blah blah blah, some terminology that we all accept as a society and say, okay, we do know that there is going to be from time to time a self-driving car that runs someone over. But within our society, we like self-driving. It is way better for our society to do this than not. And so the companies now get the legal coverage, the regulation, the case has come forward to say, okay, we know within this reason most of the time, or more than most of the time, it works, and we're okay with it. And when it's not, companies have insurance for those things, just like doctors have it, and we move on from it. But that's just a very weird thing. But we do that with humans. We allow humans to make errors, but with these algorithms, we don't want that at all because it's so new. But I can see that coming in, that we're going to end up saying the benefit of these are better for us, and we just need to be ready for where these are and to be aware that when we're crossing the street, know that a car may not stop, just like now. I mean, people get hit all the time. I'm not trying to laugh at it, but it's not like that never occurs when humans are driving.
I agree. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I think there's go going to be a statistical threshold, and when they reach it, they're going to let them do the driving. I agree with that 100%. But I had this argument with one of our advisory board members who was from Microsoft, the gentleman, when we were talking about interpretability. And he did said the exact same thing that you said. It's like technological failures are actually very common, and they cause a lot of damage, and they cause loss of life, property, all of that. And this would be one of them. This also would be a technological failure. And to which I to that I say that yes, maybe statistically, if you look at it, yes. But there is a fundamental difference here. For example, when an airplane's wing fails, that is a design in the flaw. That is a flaw in the design. That is a flaw in the manufacturing. We can put our finger on what exactly caused this failure, and we learn from it, we fix it. That is not the case with deep learning. When deep learning runs someone over, no one can look at the model and say, this is what caused it. This part of the model did it. This coefficient, this connection inside the model, this was the reason. And we would just have to live with that model, or build a new one with whole new set of errors that it makes that are unknown to us. Even if we make it to the same data set, even if we same make it with the same training algorithm, it will be a new set of errors that it will make. So that is the fundamental difference between when train derailment happens, and we can go actually look and say, okay, there was a crack in the tracks here. This is the
Right.
reason of the failure. Let's learn from this. But we don't have that with deep learning. And I
Right.
think at some point we are going to value interpretable and transparent models where we can actually find what caused the error. That's what I think is key here. I'm glad this conversation let me think through this. What if we are able to learn from our errors? If a model enables us to learn from its errors and go and fix that type of errors, I think that model is good enough for it.
Right. Well, I think back on the Chernobyl nuclear disaster, and that was decades ago. But they're still looking at those things, and we have a minute by minute account of what mistakes were done, what errors were there, what designs flaws were there, so that now we can hopefully alleviate something like that from ever happening again. And right now we're kind of going and we're, for lack of a better term, back in Los Alamos, just throwing particles at stuff and trying to figure out what nuclear reactions we're going to have within the metaphor of artificial
That's
intelligence.
literally
We're
what we are doing now. We are throwing data at a model. That's all we are doing, and we are guiding its training, but after strain or while it's being trained, we don't know what's happening inside it because it's not possible to figure out what's happening inside it. And that's by design. That's like previously, and when we were all people that work with data were statisticians, they would construct a model meticulously and sit down, and for every part of it, they would have a justification why part of this is like this. And the deep learning approach was, let's just delegate the construction model to the computer too. And that's why we don't know what it constructs.
I see. So again, going with our nuclear metaphor, it was like building that core one piece at a time. Here we go. And now it's like, oh, we don't have to do that as much because we've figured out this. But then you're like, wow, these reactions get a whole lot bigger and a whole lot more violent in the occurrence of what happens. And I think our models are starting to show that. And that's where we get professionals writing letters of like, you can blow up the world with artificial intelligence. Like, we need to be cautious of that.
It's imagine we are starting to make nuclear reactors, and 1% of them explode. And we never know why. And then we say we can work on making this 1% half a percent or a tenth of a percent, but we will never know why they are exploding. And then I think that's fundamentally different than actually if half a percent of them explode and we know why. Then we could just work on it. And with Chernobyl example, they knew what it was wrong. They retrofitted the rest of the
The ones in Russia.
reactors. They retrofit, and that we don't have that. We don't have that with deep learning. We if a deep learning so if let's say BMW's self-driving model starts killing women, we don't know how to fix it other than replacing the model with a new one. And maybe that would start killing the elderly, you know?
Or men. You're like,
Or
okay, we've corrected it for women now, and they're like, okay, we don't. You kind of start from square one again.
because you don't know which parts are wrong to go fix it because you can't read it.
We don't have the recipe.
I think that is a fundamental difference with other technologies because we have a full picture, or we don't have a full picture of any technology, but when something happens, we go figure it out why it happened. This is by nature different because we have delegated the construction of the model itself.
I mean, I know these tech bites always take us down very interesting
And dark
thought,
pathway.
dark and thoughtful journeys. And I think these are always good to continue to do. And I hope as our listeners take these journeys with us, they're asking some of these questions as well. And maybe we're just going to add to the discourse and figure out some better things and help direct our world towards a brighter future when it comes to all of these things. But again, thank you so much for joining me today and having this conversation.
Thank you so much. It was a joy again, and I'm looking forward for the next one with Biagio.
And thank you for listening to another episode of The Gateway, brought to you by Northern Illinois University, where your future is our focus. And please remember to love always the promise of tomorrow today.